Welcome to episode 10 of Your Hearth at Home. My name is Tara and I am so grateful that you are here. Today I am excited to be speaking with Jared Grantham, a love and liberation alchemist and co-founder of Limitless Love, based on the Gold Coast in Queensland, Australia. This is a very special conversation for me as Jared and his partner Abby are the team that I started my healing journey with. In this episode, Jared dives into the power of the breath and how, in his words, breathwork saved his life. With 3 months of practice, he shifted from consistent and severe panic attacks to cultivating peace and clarity in his being. He also provides insight into his journey through addiction and how to connect and cultivate a relationship with your intuition. I am so grateful to be able to connect you to Jared's story and wisdom in this space. I hope that you enjoy. Welcome back to Your Hearth at Home. I'm joined by a very special guest today, Jared Grantham of Limitless Love, who holds a very special place in my heart. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I really, really appreciate it. And I love to share. I mean, that's why I'm here.
Oh, thank you. So what we're here to discuss today is a little bit about the beautiful modality of breathwork. And I'm hoping that you might be able to share a little bit more about some context, how you came to the modality, what you've moved through, and kind of what's brought you to this space.
Yeah, amazing. Well, I want to start this by sharing. Thank you for that. I want to start by sharing. Essentially, for me, breath, as we all know, is our life force energy. It's the energy that supports our body to function the way that it does. And for so many of us, we don't breathe correctly or breathe sometimes at all. Sometimes, you know, we have an experience that makes us feel a certain way. We feel anxious and we stop breathing. And often my tagline is breathwork saved my life, you know, because I believe prior to it, I wasn't fully experiencing life. And the inception of the practice of breathwork, intentional breathing, which is what breathwork is, really was about four and a half years ago when I was navigating a pretty tumultuous experience in a relationship. Really, really struggling to connect with who I was. I was battling addiction, quite chronic PTSD. I was having pretty severe panic attacks, about 3 to 4, up to almost 5 times a day for 45 minutes at a time. My body would go into a state where the mental chatter and the experience kinesthetically in my body was that I was dying. I felt like my spine was curling, my fingers were curling inwards. I'd sweat, my heart would race, I would feel like this heavy weight in my chest, tingling sensation on the back of my neck that didn't feel comfortable. And after having maybe 10 of those in less than a week, I spoke to a doctor and he's like, "You have panic disorder, chronic panic disorder actually." He didn't have to do too much testing or ask too many questions. I basically shared what I've been experiencing. And he's like, "That is a symptom of PTSD," which for those that don't know is post-traumatic stress disorder, which unfolds when we have a significant emotional event that's of a certain frequency and energy that shocks the nervous system and conditions it to run on loop from what it experienced. Yeah, well, this could be getting beaten up by somebody. This could be sexual abuse. This could be even a parent that's not affectionate. This could be, you know, falling down a flight of stairs. This could be so many things, right? We all have, to a degree, trauma in our body. And what the gift that I received four and a half years ago, and I'm grateful that I get to see it in that way, was it got to a place where I had no option. I had no choice, because what I was experiencing, you know, 4 and 5 times a day for up to 45 minutes, up to 3 hours at a time, was the fear of death. It was the story I was telling myself. It was what my body was feeling like. I thought my mind was saying, your heart's going to explode. My thoughts were like, your head's going to explode. And it literally was, and I know some people listening to this may be able to relate, because it's not, as I started to share about it, I realized that, holy moly, 1 in 10 people that I'd met could relate on a really, really deep level. And I'm like, whoa. So it was amongst all of that chaos and that madness that was in my body, I was only attracting that, right? It was only attracting that in my life. You know, it's just a reflection of my inner realms, you know? So I found it on a yoga mat in a yoga studio, back in 2016, in one of my most scary states. I had just done a yin yoga class, and the yin yoga would bring my anxiety from a 10 to a 4, at least until the next morning. And when I did the first style of breathing I ever experienced with one of my favorite yoga teachers, was actually skull shining breath, Kapalabhati breathing, which is a yoga pranayamic technique, you know, which I've now learned how to facilitate, and amongst many other techniques as well. And it was the first time my anxiety went down to a 0 in about 9 months, and my mind was clear, and I'm like, whoa. Peacefulness. Wow. And that's when my obsession began.
That's just, yeah, that's amazingly powerful. So from there, what was the next step for you? Like, did you speak with that yoga instructor, or how did you proceed?
Well, when you're in a place where you have no option, and when your desires become musts, it's like, this must happen now, I must learn more now, this is something that is actually working besides what everyone else is saying, this is actually tangibly getting me back to inner peace. I took a lot of action, right? Because I was in a place where I could wait around. I was living in fear. My body was full of cortisol. I was very close to inflammatory bowel disease. My gut health was poor. Like, everything, my friendships were collapsing. I couldn't work. My income was taken from me. So I'm like, well, what else can I do? Right. So I put myself in that place, and I really hope that in me sharing it, and gives people the opportunity to not get to that stage before they invite themselves into practicing breath work, you know, because now I teach the people that, yes, have mental illness, but however, most of my clients are people that don't have mental illness, that are just wanting to improve their life and expand their business, right? Which is what helps me do as well. But what it required, as anything does to become, to reach any level of mastery, because there's so many levels of mastery, is obsession. And you need to be like, this is, I'm going to live and breathe this, which I was living and breathing breath essentially for that period of time. And the obsession drew me to converse with the yoga teacher instantly. I'm like, what just happened? Right? Like, what just happened? And she's like, you just did some breath work. I'm like, what does that mean? And she's like, you did intentional breathing with a particular goal and intention in mind. I'm like, can I do more of this? I'm like, can you teach me? So I invited her to my house, and for 7 days straight, she spent 3.5 hours in my house. That was 2 weeks later, sorry. Teaching me yoga privately, 2 hours a day of Ashtanga yoga, and then somewhere between 60 to 90 minutes a day of breath work. And she kept teaching me, showing me Bhastrika's breath and alternate nose breathing and skull shining breath and the many variations of it. Like, that was my initiation into breath work. So yeah, that's kind of where it started, and I became obsessed with it. And what would happen is, every time I was about to enter this state that I was beginning to be able to predict of when a panic attack would hit and take over my body and take over my being, I would be able to insert in that 10 to 15 seconds leading up to it, which I would have to, before it would all start to unhinge and unfold, I would sit and I would breathe. Wouldn't matter whether I was at work or at a restaurant, I would literally, because I was having panic attacks at restaurants, so I would run outside, sit on the earth, and start breathing, or jump in my car and do breath work. Like, literally, I did not care. I was literally no interest in whether anyone else thought I was weird. I was like, I am here to shift myself back into liberation, essentially. So the obsession drove me to a place where, you know, 12 months later, I was breathing by myself at home for anywhere from an hour to 3 hours each day by myself. And I did a yoga teacher training, which allowed me to then facilitate yoga breath work and pranayama, which was really great. And then I went into circular breathing, then Wim Hof, then Soma, and holotropic, and like you name it, I've kind of gone there. even into the deeper levels of like somatic sexuality using breathwork, right? And what that's given to me now is this whole other dynamic of what breathwork. You know, first it was designed. I utilize it as a medicine, as a tool to heal me, which is a tangible medicine, not a pharmaceutical tablet that delays and creates more problems down the track. It was actually a solution that within 3.5 months, within 3.5 months, I went from having panic attacks 3 or 4 times a day to none at all, to zero. In 3.5 months using breath work. And what's great is we have clients that have had panic attacks now, we've had for 3 and 4 and 5 and up to 10 years. They spend 3 days in one of our programs and they're gone. Like, forget, for good, like done. Which is a great, incredible gift. You know, with my obsession with it, I figured out how to facilitate in a way where it gets them the result that took me 3 months in 3 days, sometimes 3 hours.
Well, and I can speak to the power of your facilitation, having experienced it quite a few times myself. I'd love to know your thoughts on self-sabotage. So when you find something that works so well, for me and in my journey with breathwork, I find that I am coming up against a lot of resistance. And I know mentally and in my body, I know the power of this modality, because I was struggling with anxiety when we first met.
Yes.
And in Become, I learned about breath work and I did breath work and my anxiety essentially disappeared and so I'm aware of this, and I come up against resistance still to this day.
Beautiful.
So what are your thoughts on this, you know, like so powerful, but yet perhaps self-sabotage, or what do you think on that?
This is incredible. So there's a lot of people like even on the level that haven't even experimented with breathwork, but have heard the benefits, right? They may have had a friend that Wim Hof breathing has changed their life, or Soma has changed their life, or holotropic breathing has changed their life, or pranayama has changed their life. And their friend is like, you need to do this, you need to practice it. And they're sitting in the space of, I know it's a great idea, but they don't quite have, they procrastinate on doing it, and they keep putting it off, and then they plan to do it, but then they meet the resistance, and the moment when it is time to do it, they don't do it, right? So what would I recommend to people in that position? Because that is a reflection of procrastination. It's also an addiction to staying in the same place. And what's interesting is, like, you know, one of the things that breathwork helped me overcome was addiction. An addiction can be, it was the first way you framed it, was self-sabotage. Self-sabotage is also an addiction. Addiction can be alcohol and drugs, which has been me in the past as well, which has been part of the creation of what I experienced back then. Addiction can be, addiction could be to porn, you know, masturbating 3 and 4 times a day, which I've also been there as well. Addiction can be to food. Addiction can be to not practicing the things that you know you need to do for yourself, for your own greater well-being, right? And this is an addiction to I call it an addiction to sameness. It's like we know this thing is here as a bridge to our next expression of who we get to be, but there's some really important decisions that need to make for the individual, right? And it's like, do I want to be, because what supported has always supported me with my mindset, however, in general, is, do I want to be the person that knows what's good for them? My intuition is speaking to me and through me, yet I ignore it. Or do I want to be the person that listens to my intuition, therefore cultivates a life? And I will speak to intuition, because that's a big part, because a lot of people intuitively know they should be doing it. Intuitively, their body's like, you should be doing more breathwork, right? You should be eating healthier. You shouldn't look at porn as much, or you shouldn't take drugs, or you should think your intuition is here. It's always talking to us, right? And with that, we have become disconnected from the source of energy that is our higher self, right? The version of us that is our best self, the version of us that knows all the things it needs to know to achieve the dreams that we have, the version of us that's sitting there, this energetic version of us or spiritual version of us or how you want to perceive it, that's looking at you going, these are the things you said you want to do. I'm going to give you information and reminders constantly to remind you and keep you accountable to be the person you said you wanted to be, right? And what people don't do, what humans don't do, what I spent 28 years not doing, and that's why I end up in the space that I was in a very extreme way, was I suppressed my intuition. I did what society and the people at large and maybe school or the government or whatever way you want to speak about it, conditioned me to be, rather than what does my soul want to share with me and how does my highest, my best self express itself through me? Yeah? Because there's a really key distinguishment here. I've heard probably 80% of my friends or acquaintances say, I have a good intuition. And I'm like, awesome. Most of the world has a good intuition. Actually, pretty much all of us do. And yes, there's nuances, and women have instinctual mechanisms in their body when it comes to safety for their children. This is like instinctual. However, when someone's intuition and they have a good relationship, which is a part that counts, right? Having a good relationship with your intuition, because having the intuition is step one. Embodying and taking action from your intuition is step two. So building a powerful relationship with your intuition is what creates results in your life where you experience liberation, freedom, success, whether it's in your relationships, whether it's in philanthropic endeavors, whether it's financially. And what's really interesting is the medicine is building a relationship with your intuition, because your intuition may say to you some days, actually, today's not a day to breathe. Today's a day to actually meditate and do yoga and actually just lay on the couch, right? Because the intuition isn't always going to say you need to breathe. Unless you were to say, hey, I want to cultivate this as a practice. I can see this as the medicine that's for me. And for the next 3 months, what I'm committing to doing, this is not discipline, not intuition. What I'm committing to for myself is discipline is the bridge to integrity, which bridges to self-confidence, which bridges to embodied self-worth. Discipline is as when I'm going, okay, for the next 3 months, what I'm committing to is XYZ. So that's really, there's these distinguishments that get to be kind of cleared up. It's like, am I for the next 3 months going to be in a space where I want to listen to intuitively what's for me? Or was the intuitive download that the new thing that I need to practice for the next 3 months, is it actually breath work? Or is it something else? Right? Because it's always listening to like, what is actually for you? We get caught up as humans sometimes in the things that we should be doing, as opposed to listening to what's actually for us. And when you want to be disciplined with something, if you're going to exercise your discipline, which is the way to break addiction, and build embodied confidence, build self-worth, to exercise discipline, it needs to be something that is actually for you, which comes from your intuition. So for me, in the depth of my struggle, 4.5 years ago, my intuition, when I could clear the mind enough for it to actually land and come into the present moment to actually receive, because you need to be in the present moment to receive. And intuition isn't a heap of thoughts. Intuition is actually the stillness and the subtle, soft messages that your body and your spiritual self is giving you to guide you throughout your day. And that doesn't come in the same mindset that's, you know, making dinner and then feeding the kids and then, you know, taking kids to work and then working all day. That's not where intuition lies. Intuition lies in a moment of stillness with just one breath and a prolonged exhale, just an inhale, prolonged exhale. And it can take you 30 seconds or less to actually find out what the intuition is. And then from the intuition, then you begin to exercise discipline, right? Because your intuition is like, may say to you, breathwork is a practice you get to exercise and make part of your practice. along with yoga, meditation, dance, and exercise. And what may actually be for you is breath work is 3 times a week, right? Not every day. But then some people will get a very clear message that I need to breathe every single day. You know, and for someone that's navigating like depression or PTSD or anxiety, if I were to recommend, I would be, that's the kind of person that would like, you need to breathe every day. Alternatively, people that want to be a facilitator of breath work, then I would recommend breathing every day so that you can embody the actual medicine, right? So those are all the, when you share, when you ask that, like, these are the things that come through for me, because there's so many layers to everything, so many dimensions. And I think intuition is gravely misunderstood. Like, it's like the word humility. Like, I don't know if people actually understand what humility really is. What they think it is and what the truest, the core essence of humility is completely different to what mainstream media and society thinks humility actually is, right? So yeah, but I won't go on the tangent. I'll leave it at that. And one thing, and I will speak to self-sabotage and give people a tip just to make sure that I'm, you know, making this as valuable as possible. If you're noticing that you're self-sabotaging, or you're breaking your own discipline, or you're not following through, or you're emotional eating, or you're going back to drugs constantly, you know, because no one thing is wrong. Porn is not wrong. Drugs aren't wrong. None of these things are actually innately wrong. They're all neutral. It's our inability to actually monitor and embody our own sovereignty and stay in our body whilst doing it. It's when we're reaching for them, it's reaching to marijuana or reaching to any other drug, when it's an outlet and we're suppressing feeling and being our human self. Because none of them are wrong. Porn's not wrong. Smoking marijuana is not wrong. No drug's wrong. Nothing like that in terms of for the individual choosing for themselves, none of them are wrong. It's different if you're selling it and, you know, trying to enroll your friends into doing it when that's not who they are. But doing it in yourself and self, it's not wrong. It's just that the addiction to it and the disconnection from dishonoring yourself, and it's the opposite of self-love, essentially, is what addiction is, right? Self-love is like when you truly, deeply love yourself, you love yourself enough to do what's always going to honor yourself spiritually, emotionally, physically, and mentally in every moment. That's truly embodied self-love. It's like, I love myself so deeply. I appreciate myself so much. And I value myself so much that I'm not going to do what doesn't align with who I truly am and my values. I'm not going to dilute myself. Yeah, so by no means am I advocating people do drugs, because I don't do any drugs myself. I am just like removing any of the BS that's around all that kind of stuff, right? Like drinking. Drinking is not bad. Drinking is neutral. Being an alcoholic probably is ineffective for your life, but drinking itself isn't actually bad. It's like, you know, one could argue it's about balance or harmony. One could argue that, hey, it's my birthday and I've got my 10 closest friends around me, I'd like to have a glass of red wine, you know? So, you know, none of these things are wrong. It's just a matter of like realizing, like, where is it coming from? Yeah.
So in terms of self-sabotage, you were perhaps going to provide a tip.
Yes, beautiful. Thank you for reminding me. So a tip, something that I used, I had an experience, which I won't get into the details of it at the moment, but I had an experience in my life that made me decide personally to go celibate for a period of time. And at the time, I wasn't addicted to drugs or alcohol or porn or anything, but what I wanted to do was clear everything out, all of my need for anything outside of myself, right? And what I was meeting was the part of my body that still wanted to look at porn, right? That still wanted to message that girl and invite her over to obviously have sex with her. The part of me that wanted to go out and have a really big night out. Yeah, so I took a vow of celibacy and I didn't tell anybody. I just did it myself. I just told no one and I just actioned it. I went for 9 months. It was 9 months leading up to meeting Abby. And the tip and the tool to implement in that time is like to have a practice to replace the addiction. One of them is meditation. So self-inquiry is a powerful one, right? So sitting in stillness, taking a deep inhale in, exhale out, and asking yourself questions like, if you've got an addiction, like when that thought comes up, like the thought may be something like, you should have a drink, or the thought is you should eat that piece of cake. It's like taking a deep breath and asking yourself, is there anything that I'm avoiding right now? Yeah, it's a self-inquiry. Another way you can look at it is like, what is truly present for me? Funny, like what is really actually present for me? Is it that I want the cake, or is it that I'm needing to feel loved? Is it that I need to feel comforted? And maybe a phone call with a friend that loves you dearly is actually going to be a solution rather than a piece of cake or some other outlet, right? So it's replacing it with something. So it's having a toolkit of replacements for that thing. So one of those could be connecting with a friend or a couple of friends you have. Be like, hey, I'm just working through an addiction at the moment. I just wanted to know if every now and then, if we could jump on a call just so that I can support myself to experience what's actually missing in my life. That could be connection, right? Breath work is the one that I use the most. I would do 5 minutes of intentional breathing, and that could be as simple as like inhaling into your lower abdomen, feeling your belly rise, and exhaling out for 5 minutes. It can be as that simple as that for 5 minutes, and then seeing if you still want to have that drink, then seeing if you still want that piece of cake. Because often what I found now, if I know that I'm eating, because I'll eat everything, right? I'll eat cake sometimes, I'll have a drink occasionally. But what I do is, if I notice it's like a nudge, it's like, you should have that. I'm like, take some breaths first. And I'm like, if I still want it after I've connected deeply with my actual true self, then I'll have it. But if I breathe and my actual truth is, no, I don't want the cake, then I won't do it. Yeah. So it's just really putting that, because what that does is that removes the reason why this is important. The reason why addiction is it just can destroy your life. Doesn't destroy your life, but it can destroy your life. Is the emotions that are linked to addiction are guilt and shame. They are the lowest vibrations. So the more that we continue to settle for our addiction, the body, whether you're aware of it or not, energetically is storing guilt and shame. Now we manifest experiences, people, our outside environment, our opportunities and work and everything that we create from what is stored in our body. So if we're storing guilt and shame and we're wondering why our relationship is toxic or our boss treats us poorly or we were trying to make this business or this movement work, but there's this energy that won't let you do it, and you're noticing you have procrastination, it's this energy that's trapped in your body. And every time you breathe and you decide internally, your psyche and your soul decide that I am actually consciously choosing to eat this cake. I'm constantly consciously choosing to drink. I'm consciously choosing. All the guilt and shame is gone. And then it's okay. And that's the vibration that actually is worse than, like, I had one of my mentors back in the day. He was sharing in one of my groups, and he was like, I would rather you eat a McDonald's cheeseburger and celebrate it and be in a high vibration eating a cheeseburger, and then you'd be vegan and feel guilt and shame for what you're eating, right? And it was powerful and very, very quite confronting. However, what he's talking about is, like, he understands, and as I'm sure you do as well, is the energetics behind things mean so much more than the actual three-dimensional representation in our life, right?
Yeah.
Like, money only has meaning because we gave it meaning, as an example. Money only has so much power over people because we've given it that power over people, right? That's a great example, because everyone understands money. It's as powerful as you give it power, yeah? And it runs your life, or you can run it, right? Or you can work with it, yeah? So it's like this really interesting thing that you know, everything like this is neutral. I can use it to drink water, or I could bop someone on the head with it. This is someone holding a bottle in my hand, right? I could bop someone on the head with it, or I could drink water out of it. But I am the source that makes this what it is. So again, nothing is bad or wrong. It's just how we relate to it.
Then in terms of breath work and raising this vibration, raising us out of, so that we can connect to your true self. So how, in terms of our physical body, how does that work? How does the breath physically help us to get there?
Oh, this is my favorite question to answer. Thank you so much. So, okay, what breathwork actually does, there's so many things, and it's teaching me every day, right? Because like a good example, like we're creating something at the moment, and I breathed for 30 minutes with Abby, and it's teaching me. It's like I'm connecting with the earth. Mother Earth is like teaching me what's actually happening, right? Because there's the scientific version, yeah, that talks about atoms and cells and, you know, your energy. But then there's the esoteric version as well, right? So there's both kind of sides to it, and both are right, and both are just right. So on a scientific level, what's happening, and I'll explain this actually in a bit more of a metaphorical way, because it makes more sense than rattling of science. But if you think about, you know, breath itself is life force energy. Yeah. You could argue that one of the greatest strengths of like yogis and serious meditators and breathwork practitioners, one of their strengths is that they're really clear. They're really themselves. They're really centered. They're really in their body, right? And that's because they spend so much time actually breathing. Now, this life force energy, which is the energy of creation, or another way you can put it is even sexual energy as well. It's actually sexual energy, right? So this energy of creation is the vibration of light. It's the vibration of enlightenment, right? It's the vibration of light. So we're breathing this into our body. This is why the applications for emotional healing are so powerful, and for releasing guilt, shame, and sadness and anger. You're breathing this life force energy into your body at an accelerated rate, more than normal. And any area in your body, like when we have trauma, sexual abuse, whatever it is, we have like pockets of stored energy, you know, dark. It doesn't mean it's negative, but dark energy, like shadow energy that's stored in the body, right? Because your shadow isn't wrong either, right? Your experiences in your life are not wrong. They're just a part of your life's journey. So this stored energy that's trapped in your cells, your actual tissues, your muscles, your tendons, this energy that's trapped in there, and when you're breathing this life force, this white light into your body, filling your body, filling your cells with this life force energy, and it starts to vibrate anything that isn't the same vibration to light, that isn't the same vibration to pure life force. And it starts to enter your body at an accelerated rate, and it goes in, it starts to work on the cells, on the muscles, on the tendons, and it starts to move its way around. The cells begin to actually vibrate themselves whilst you're breathing, because you're giving them more energy, right? So your cells are getting more energy, so they start to vibrate. And when they start to vibrate, all of these elements that are trapped to them, all this, you know, toxic, like this stress, the anger, the sadness, or whatever it may have been that's trapped in that cell, it starts to get legs and move. It starts to vibrate in your body. So you imagine it like vibrating, and then eventually it releases. And with your breath, each exhale, you're releasing out what no longer serves you, and you're breathing in life force energy. Exhaling out what no longer serves you, and breathing in life force energy. So essentially, and what happens when breath enters your body, it becomes you. It goes into your bloodstream, oxygen goes into your bloodstream, and it becomes you. So it's making you more of yourself. And that's why it's such a powerful healing modality. And also it's supporting us in business, in channeling sexual energy, which amplifies our manifestation. It supports us in the creation process, everything we do. Because if we're running around and we're dealing with a lot of people and a lot of phone calls, and then now I want to create what's here for me, first I need to connect with me. First I need to fill me up to the brim, so that what I'm creating is actually me, not somebody else's version of me. So I use it implicitly for creation. And a joke, but it's the truth, is like, you know, my intuition and breathwork is my business coach. It's given me more clarity than anything else. That's why when we facilitate, I'm like, I will guide you through the breath work, but then I want you and your higher self to tell you what you need to do. Right?
Please pardon the interruption in this wonderful podcast episode. I'd like to take a moment to share with you the opportunity to be in community and supported in your at-home practice of self-love. I invite you to join the Sacred Circle Collective. This is a group of like-hearted people who gather at each quarter moon to complete a practice, whether that be meditation, movement, breathwork, or any of the other fun stuff that we get up to in the space. This collective is about setting aside 1 hour each week to invest in yourself. If you are listening to this podcast episode, then I believe that you are conscious, curious, and open to practicing self-love. Click the link in the show notes for further information and to claim your first month free. That's all replays, 4 live practices, and the chance to be in this community at no charge with no obligation. I am so grateful and excited to share this space with you, and I can't wait to see you in there. And now, back to the podcast. In terms of an accelerated rate of breathing versus intentional breathing, how fast does one have to breathe? Can it be, is it just the intentionality, or does it actually really have to be rapid? How does that all work?
Yeah, cool. So just a beautiful discernment here, a distinction, sorry, I need to make is that accelerated breathing and intentional breathing can be the exact same thing. Intentional breathing and breath work is basically intentional breathing in a format. Yeah, it's like bringing awareness to your actual breath. So you're bringing your human self to be like, actually, because it's usually an automatic response. It's part of the autonomic nervous system and it just does its thing. You're just breathing organically, right? And through the trauma we experience in life, it determines whether we're taking 27 small breaths in and out in a minute or not breathing at all, or we're taking 4 deep, long, fulfilling breaths each minute. So depending on how much trauma is still in our cells, will determine how many breaths we take each minute. So breath work is you teaching you to take less breaths. You do breath work to become more energy efficient, because when someone's a seasoned practitioner or practicer of breath work, then what happens is they actually start taking less breaths. When they train Marines, they teach them and their average breath is 7 per minute. The average human is about 18 to 27. So Marines, because they have to stay calm and centered in chaos, so they teach them to take about average of 7 breaths per minute. Right? Now, to come back to your question around accelerated breathing. So accelerated breathing, what that does is that's very energizing, right? It's very activating. And to a degree, like depending on the style of breathing you're doing, accelerated breathing can start to put you into a sympathetic state, which the sympathetic state can then bring up and allow you, give you the ability to actually heal trauma, because you have to access the sympathetic nervous system to be able to access the trauma, right? It's where it starts, where it's lying, where it lives. Whereas when you're in parasympathetic, when you're taking longer exhales and really putting space between breaths, that's going to give you, that's really good for before you go to bed and for resting. And if you have a really lazy Sunday and you don't want to be high energy, you don't want to be getting shit done, you want to be on the couch and you want to like bake and you want to spend time with your kids and you just want to be fully in flow, that's when you want to be in parasympathetic, which is very nourishing. But then the other side of it is you can breathe rapidly and that puts you into a sympathetic state, which is very energizing. It can take you to complete ecstasy. This is really good in like sexual practices and really good in emotional healing practices. And manifestation, like, whew, because when you do rapid breathing, what you're doing is the more you breathe, the more you expand your energetic field, right? So if you're taking more breaths faster, you're expanding your energetic field faster. So if you're manifesting and your energetic field is bigger, you're going to be able to magnetize more things to you because your energy field is bigger. The science around this is starting to really unearth. It's really incredible. That's all I wanted to share. It's starting to become a real, and I've been able to prove it energetically with quantum physics and science, how it's actually happening.
So then perhaps when one is fostering a practice, it might be of value to work with both the sympathetic and the parasympathetic.
Totally, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So sympathetic, you would go, is for healing, for manifestation. I mean, parasympathetic also for manifestation as well. Parasympathetic also for sexual energy as well. But I find for heightened experiences, right? So heightened expansion experiences, you want to go sympathetic.
Mm.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay. And is this something that one can delve into without a ton of guidance, like just looking online? Or is breath work kind of something that you suggest one should pursue with more formal guidance?
I think to start off with, it's really good to have a connection to somebody. I mean, on the very simple at home, for people that hear this right now, they can do things like, I mean, this will probably get released soon. But we've got a breathing program that's opening right now. Or there's YouTube videos with, like, say, Wim Hof as an example, where it's like 22 minutes of breathing or 20 minutes of breathing. And it being guided is really effective when you haven't practiced it before. Right? So, like, the reason why, like, Together We Breathe, the program that we're literally is launching today, it's a free challenge, 8-day of breath work, and 8 different styles of breath work. It's great for people that haven't breathed, because it's kind of guiding you through it. Because if you just say, this is how you do it, and do it at home by yourself, and I didn't show them anything, because there's a lack of clarity. And whether that, because as humans, if we get the feeling like we're doing it wrong, we stop doing something, right? But when we have someone that's like, yes, this is the way to do it, and that can reflect back to us, that's it, perfect, you've nailed it, that's the way to do it, instantly we're like, I can do this. And then we have a little more confidence to go home and practice, right? But when we are feeling like we're doing it, it's like when we first start doing yoga. That's why a lot of people come to yoga a few times and they don't keep going. It's because they've created a story around, I'm doing it wrong, I can't do it. It's like that. We have an expectation of ourselves to be a full-blown yogi in 3 hours flat, right? That's the expectation that we organically, unconsciously have, which is unfortunate. However, once we move past that, and as you've experienced, as I've experienced with yoga, it's like once you get into that, you're practicing kind of like 4 times a week for like 2 months. And you're like, okay, I'm not a pro, but I'm starting to get this. Yeah, I'm going to keep sticking to this. And then 6 months, you're like, okay, I'm slowly on the kind of beginner, kind of coming into intermediate, depending on how diligently you practice. And for those that have been practicing for like, say, 10 years, and they've had like, you know, 3 hours a day or whatever, they're like, you know, advanced. You know, and those are usually people that are teaching all the time, obviously, as well, right? And teach the teachers as well. So yeah.
So in terms of if somebody were to start with one practice and just, you know, like you say, just stick with it and do it diligently, is there a specific type of breathing that you would suggest is a good place to start to, say, build that confidence and to kind of dip your toes in?
I think definitely. I think for if the whole world stopped and did 22 inhales through their nose, brought their awareness to their lower abdomen, if they brought their awareness to that, if every single person on the planet, I'm being very generic and totally just projecting right now. However, given what the simplicity of what I'm about to share, if everyone had this simple practice, it would change everything. And if we had the awareness to be like, I'm really reactive right now, not responsive, because responsive is like watching and listening and hearing and then acting, whereas reacting is just like hearing and acting. It's just like, well, boom, yeah, we're supposed to be responsive. So a really effective strategy for all of us is being responsive and being able to slow down and listen. We have something come up. It's if we were to have, and the best way to do it, those that are at home that are listening to this right now, that I would place my hand, my palm, you know, just below my belly button, and you can eyes open or eyes closed either way, but I'll just breathe into my lower abdomen. And I'll just keep doing that for 22 breaths, and I'll keep it really simple. And the simplicity of that, for kids can do that as well. Kids can do it at home. You don't need to be a facilitator to share that one. That's like a really simple, like, human life skill, like just 22 breathing, 22 breaths, like into your lower abdomen. And what happens when we breathe into that space, it's the space that women call their womb, and men may call their hara. But it is a place of respiratory sanctuary, breathing into our abdomen. And what this actually does is instantly puts us in our parasympathetic nervous system, which is rest and digest, which is the best place where if people want to know where their intuition actually lies, that's where it is. And the reason why it lies there is when you're in your parasympathetic nervous system, your brain goes from beta, which is a normal waking state. It's like getting everything done. It's getting the house organized. It's working. It's sending that email. It's doing all those things. It moves us from beta to alpha. And then alpha is when the brainwave state alpha awakens when we're in our parasympathetic nervous system. And it slows time down. And what you generally notice is your thoughts become slower. When you're in alpha, your thoughts become slower. And then the next level of that, in some of our deep practices, we get people into a theta brain state. And theta is where you get the deep seated intuition. Like theta is where your actual deepest intuition lies around the biggest life choices that you get to make, right? What that name for your new business is called, or whether you should partner with somebody, or whether you should give that ex-partner another chance, or whether you should send your kid to that school, like whatever the thing is, that's where the deep intuition, like that life-changing intuition lies, is in theta. And then there's like, you go into like gamma and all different, like a delta when you're breathing as well. But yeah, that's all like for big experiences. Whereas alpha and theta, you can kind of do it home by yourself, right? But yeah, alpha, like that's a very simple way to get yourself an alpha. And if you're someone that navigates anxiety or stress, or you have a business and kids, or you have like a busy life, getting yourself into alpha state twice a day, if you could do that, that could take you literally 3 minutes twice a day. If you could do just that, 22 deep inhales into your lower abdomen and feel your belly rising. If you could just do just that, when you wake up and when you go to bed for 3 minutes, the simplicity of that would change lives.
And that was in through the nose, out through the mouth.
Yes. Yeah.
Amazing. That's 3 minutes. So 6 minutes a day. That's doable.
Yeah, well, I mean, most of us know that our decisions create our reality. Every choice we make, we are the creator, right? And I really value making decisions from being centered, not being reactive, from being responsive, not reactive, right? So I think if we all made some better choices from a place of actually being who we really are and from who we decide we want to be rather than who everything else, because getting caught in beta, we're getting caught in that mindset. It's like you're coming from this thing to this thing to this thing. So your energy is diluted by everybody else and everyone else's thoughts and beliefs. Because your truth is your truth. And that lives in here. That lives in this body that you have. Your truth, it lives in there. And no one else can tell that to you.
Yeah.
That's the gift that we have. No one else can tell you your truth. It can only tell you universal truth, like love is all there is. Like love is the only thing that actually exists in all. That's an all truth. But your truth is your truth.
Mm. I feel like I've just gotten so much amazing information. Oh my. Is there anything else that you feel called to share about the breath, about the practice, that you haven't already?
I'd like to just build on the last thing that I said. And I'm a facilitator that's out there now. I've moved from in 4.5 years from being in what one would say is the most scariest version of my life, with all the wrong people around me, drug addiction, PTSD. I had, the crazy thing is I had the house in the water, I had the money in the bank, and I had the car. I'd had all the things, right? But my actual experience of it was very poor. And one thing I would share is, and this is what someone asked me what I would share with my 18-year-old self, or if I had a son right now, what would I share with him? And the greatest advice I can give to anyone is to actually trust yourself. Trust yourself in the sense that you get to build a relationship with yourself on a level that is the highest service to who you are in this lifetime. And surround yourself with things, practices, people, environments that allow you to continue to build the muscle of trusting yourself. Because the more you trust yourself, the dream you want to create becomes easier. It becomes your dream. When it becomes yours, you have more ownership over it. And when you have ownership over it, you can then develop an obsession with it. When you can develop an obsession with anything that you want to create or a dream, that's when it comes into fruition. Mm. When we dilute ourselves, everybody else's opinion, what they think we should be doing and what is the next hot fucking thing or whatever, or the shiny object syndrome, we continue to end up in a life where we might be happy, quote unquote, happy on the first layer, but we're never deeply fulfilled, right? We're on the version of where our life looks really good or looks really great, and everyone's like, oh, your life is perfect, your life is all these things. But deep within your core, you're like, I don't actually truly, when I'm honest with myself, feel that. Like I say that, yeah, I say it sometimes because I know that at 28 years old, I was saying, I'm like, yeah, I lived the dream. I had a house and a car. I had all these women around me. I had a fucking life. However, when I really checked in, I'm like, this is not who I am. This is nothing close to what my actual dream is. It's like, because your dream lies more in how you feel on a day-to-day basis and how you relate to yourself on a day-to-day basis than it does the things that you achieve. Right? That's the truth. And then the thing is when you are in a profound place of fulfillment and then you do buy that beautiful home or own that nice car, you're not purchasing something to feel worthy. You're doing something because you are worthy. And that's it. Mic drop.
You're absolutely beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. And the only other question that I have that I'm so curious, I like to ask. So we speak today about breath work, and I just wonder if there's anything besides that beautiful practice that you do, any other practices outside of that modality that you embrace, anything at all that you use to nourish your sanctuary within?
Totally. So in my healing journey, I really, like for me personally, I've used yoga in the scariest times. I became a practitioner and a yoga teacher as well at one stage. The things that I'm implementing now, I love embodied dance. I really, really appreciate it. I probably do it somewhere between 2 to 3 times a week. So it's not an everyday thing. It's not I do this every day. And my intuition is like, no, that's a 2 times, 3 times a week for you kind of thing, right? And that's my flow. I still breathe probably almost every day. Usually it's like 98% of my breathe. There's the other day I don't. But I also like to practice doing nothing too. So this is my new edge because I've been so disciplined and done so many things that now I'm actually like, can I do nothing and still be that embodied, right? That's the next thing that I'm playing with. But dance is another thing. And what I love about dance is it lets you, because you can move your body any way that you want. You can roll your shoulders, your spine, your hips, and you can find and access things in there that aren't linear, that aren't structured, that aren't rigid, that aren't predictable. And you can, with the right music and the right intention, you can move energy through your body with dance, and it can be extremely healing. Extremely healing. I have friends that have used things like embodied dance on a very similar level to how I've used breath work to heal myself, right? So an embodied dance just basically means that you're not doing it in a linear way that looks like Justin Timberlake, Chris Brown, or Michael Jackson. You're doing it in a way that your body is just organically expressing itself, and it's very non-linear. It doesn't look organized. It doesn't look, it can look sexy, but it's not designed to look sexy. It's designed to look real. It's designed to be the expression of your soul in that moment, which, yeah, is not, it doesn't always look pretty. It looks everything. It's all of you. It's literally all of who you are inside expressed out of you. And the other one that I always recommend is just pure stillness. You know, like just literally pure stillness, just meditation with no music, And you might be just, you might literally just be laying on the couch. It doesn't need to be like in yoga poses. It can be just laying on the couch and saying, for the next 10 minutes, I'm just going to be with myself and shut the world out, close my eyes down and come home.
Beautiful. Thank you. Oh, thank you so much for these beautiful, beautiful nuggets of wisdom. Really appreciate having you on.
It's an honor to be able to connect with you, share with you, speak to your communities as they're growing and as they're building. I really honor you again for who you are and the beautiful light that you embody, because it really means a lot in this time and right now. And we're recording this in the middle of the coronavirus epidemic, you know, so right now I think it's really important for us to continue to grow as individuals. And share as much as we can, you know, because there's a lot of things that some of us have cultivated or grown through and learned that you know, beyond when the pandemic will, you know, soften and dissolve and whatever will happen the way that it needs to. And then beyond that, we're going to have a lot of people that are going to need people like you, like me, to be that beacon of light when they've experienced all this, you know, scariness and trauma and uncertainty. It's like those of us that can actually be still and be like, I can connect with you if you need support, you know, and that's really, really meaningful. And for me to be in collaboration with you and to connect with you is an absolute blessing. So thank you.
Yes. Thank you so much for being that beacon for me.
Of course.
And I was looking for support, right? So thank you. I honor you and I'm so grateful to have you here. Thank you.
Of course. Absolute pleasure.
I'm very grateful for Jared's ability to speak to the medicine of the breath in such an embodied capacity. I'm also grateful for his willingness to speak so candidly about taboo topics within addiction and how these substances or behaviors themselves are not wrong, but instead our relationship to them is what we get to focus on. Radical responsibility for self is something that Jared and Abby have taught me, and I am so grateful for this teaching. Please make sure that you go and check out Limitless Love on social media. As of this podcast's release date, Abby and Jared are in the process of offering a free 21-day online immersion experience. It is called Unify, and you don't want to miss this. Make sure that you go and check it out. And please do let me know, how are you enjoying these episodes so far? Do you have someone you want to hear in this space, or are curious about a specific question or modality or concept? Please connect with me on social media and join the Your Hearth at Home private Facebook community to connect further with listeners from all around the world, as well as to our featured guests. All of the links are in the show notes. I am sending you so much love. And I will see you next week. Namaste.